Hello, happy Wednesday. Happy spring day. I guess yesterday was the first of spring, so we don't care. It's lovely here today. Thank you so much for joining us on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and you're listening to Art Speak Radio every Wednesday, noon to 1, here in from the lovely studios in Midtown, Kansas City. So thank you for making us a priority. Today's show is filled with artists, writers, illustrators, musicians, storytellers, and everything else that you can find in the creative sun here in Kansas City. We've got writer Bob Summer here, Stephen Johnson, Charlene Pryor, Wick Thomas, and Katie Gilchrist. They're all going to join us this afternoon, and so stay tuned for a really wonderful conversation of poets, writing, and such. Let me introduce my first guest, who is Robert F. Summer. He's written Losing Francis, Essays on the Wars at Home, and he's going to talk about the book, give us some background, but I want to say that I read the book, and it's just beautifully written, and all the reviews, everyone that has reviewed the book, I'm in total agreement. So welcome to the show, Bob.
Well, thank you, Maria. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. Let's give a little background information about Losing Francis, Essays on the War at Home.
Sure. Well, the book is both traces our family's history during the period of my son's deployments, as well as his homecoming. After he had deployed, he was in both Iraq and Afghanistan, extended tours in both instances, and we lost him in a car accident a few years after he came home. He brought home a great many issues, both physical and moral, about his time in the service. And I had actually, in a sense, been writing about my concerns about the war even while he was deployed. So some of the prose that's included, or some excerpts that are included in the book, are from some of those writings as well. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to be able to kind of tell a history of the period, because it was very much a case of, he had invisible wounds, but these were also invisible wars,
right?
As well. And if it's all right with you, I'll just share a very brief passage that would kind of
Absolutely.
Illustrate that point.
Absolutely. But I do want to mention that his story is similar, in a sense, with other veterans that return from war, right?
Well, that's very true. And, what I began to realize was, how little was being recognized. I mean, we kind of, we have the sense of adulation about our veterans and soldiers, and yet at the same time, the inside story of what really has happened to them and to their families as well is not told or understood. Mm-hmm. As well, and the wars were very much off the radar. I mean, that was part of the point, was the invisible wars as well. I came to think of the book finally as not so much a history of the original subtitle. Let me put it this way: the original subtitle of the book was One Family's Journey Through through a Decade of American War. Mm-hmm. But I began to realize that it was actually a nation's journey through that period. And that was, so I really wanted to kind of create a history of the period, of the unseen side of that period as well.
And as I mentioned, it is beautifully written. And, it transforms war and returning back home, transforms those individuals in families.
Yes, it did. I mean, we had no idea when he joined before the Iraq War began, a year before the Iraq War began. And so we really were kind of still in the kind of the mode of the 90s, sort of approach to the military.
And here we are in the 15th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, exactly.
So, yes, if you would read an excerpt from your book.
Sure. This is just a very brief passage, but I think it illustrates kind of a general theme of the book. A neighbor walking her dog stopped one afternoon while I was mowing the lawn and asked about the service banner in front of my house, a single blue star on a field of white with a red border. My mother once told me that the only time she ever saw my grandfather weep was the day he hung a service banner in his front window after my uncle joined the Navy in World War II. Back then, on any given block, many homes displayed service banners. They were a familiar sight. A gold star is substituted for blue if the serviceman or woman is killed. According to custom, only the immediate family should display a service banner. My neighbor thought it meant we were from Texas.
Wow. Wow. You know, I want to say about Losing Francis, Essays on the Wars at Home, you have eloquent meditations on nature, art, and grief, and there's also the political and social backdrop of the wars.
Well, yes. I mean, that was really one of the things that I felt would distinguish the story, mm-hmm. Because in a sense, you know, our story is like many, many others, so mm-hmm. It wasn't that unique. But I did feel like the context of the wars themselves and the experiences we were having quietly while life was going on outside. I mean, this mm-hmm. This one illustration sort of was representative of the larger experience we were having, that this intense experience of kind of tracking my son's deployments and all of the things that were going on with him, mm-hmm. and at the same time, the world was going on here as if there was nothing going on. That was just astounding to us, that it was like, well, there's no war at all. And one of the kind of themes that I try to bring out is that this wasn't an accident. This was tactical. You know, the idea that the wars would be invisible, go shopping, go to Disney mm-hmm. World, mm-hmm. Ignore the wars. In fact, the strategy for civilians was, if you ignore the terrorists, if you ignore the wars, then that's how we win. Yeah. And, that was kind of a strategy we really embraced, So that was kind of that's one of the major themes, I think, that I've tried to bring mm-hmm. out in many of the essays.
And if you've just tuned in, joining me here on ArtSpeak Radio is Bob Sommer. He's the author of Losing Francis, Essays on the Wars at Home. Could you tell us a little bit more about Francis? Because in the book, I know this man, really smart and gentle.
Well, thank you for asking, because he was an amazing young man. And, any parent will say that, I suppose. but he had tremendous gifts. And, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it was the middle child, so he floundered. He had a very high IQ. He was very mm-hmm. smart, adopted to languages and loved to read. And yet at the same time, really couldn't get focused in school. So about a year after he was out of school, he joined the service. And, we sort of naively thought, well, this will really get him settled now. It was mm-hmm. before the wars mm-hmm. and so forth. And, we didn't realize we were all joining, when that took place. So we went to his, we visited him at basic training and went to Fort Drum and so forth, where he was with the 10th Mountain Division out of Fort Drum.
Yeah, the way you've written this book, you often use prose. It seems as though you often use prose, and it's very poetic. Your storytelling is poignant, and you have so many really wonderful reviews on this book, so congratulations to you for that. And please, if you would tell our listeners about the event that's coming up this Sunday.
Sure. Yeah.
They can get their hands on your book.
Oh, that'd be super. I'll be at Prospero's Books on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and I'll be reading with poet H.C. Palmer, who's just published a wonderful book of poetry. He's a Vietnam veteran. Mm-hmm. And also on the program is John Musgrave, who appeared on the PBS Vietnam series. And I had a mm-hmm. chance to get to know John a few weeks back. And so we've been able to kind of cross-fertilize our mm-hmm. Our mm-hmm. thoughts and experiences mm-hmm. and so forth. And John is a very good poet as well. Mm-hmm. So the three of us will be reading and discussing. The theme is The Cost of War, and it's over mm-hmm. at Prospero's on 39th Street. And that'll be at 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you would mention your blog and other websites that folks can find you at.
Oh, sure. My personal blog is Uncommon Hours. And we also have a memorial blog for my son, which is called francisfund.org. That's francisfund.org. And the best place to find a full description of the book is at the publisher's website, which is Fomite Press. And there's a small independent publisher based in Burlington, and I was very fortunate mm-hmm. to be able to work with them. Mm-hmm. The publisher there, Mark Astrin, was able to kind of re-steer some of this my manuscript at an earlier mm-hmm. stage, and mm-hmm. Helped me to ferret out. One of the things that he helped me to kind of plunge into was the fact that he thought I really had not established my own attitude toward toward the wars. That on the one hand, we were, you know, supporting these wars. We're supporting our son, not supporting the wars. But on the other hand, we were actually opposing the wars. And so I was writing all these things, anti-war pieces, and some from time to time would participate in anti-war rallies and so forth. In the meanwhile, we had a son deployed over there. So kind of fitting those incongruent things together was one of the things that he really helped me, or he urged me, or insisted, I should say, that I really develop more fully. And so the final manuscript, I think, you know, I hope finally does that.
But didn't a lot of the work come kind of stem from the writing that you did in your journals as you know, after his death or during his time in service?
That's true. I'm a journal keeper, and I discovered in these recent years as I was going back that I was really glad that I had been, because there were a lot of details that would have been lost. I had this kind of weird notion while I was while the wars were going on that I was sort of archiving the war, you know, and I was always saving articles, you know, that I saw on various websites and so forth. And I didn't know at that time that they would all come to something. You know, there were a lot of details that I was able to put into the book that I did not remember until I went back through the journals and discovered them.
Well, I think there's going to be a very strong connection with other families of veterans and all. You know, it's just a beautifully written story, very poignant. I want to say that Bob Summer is the author of two novels, Where the Wind Blew and A Great Fullness. His essays and stories have appeared in many literary and scholarly journals. He is a lecturer at the University of St. Mary Leavenworth and works for the Sierra Club's Kansas City chapter in support of its mission to explore, enjoy, and protect the planet, right?
Right, that's right. Thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything that you want to mention that we haven't really talked about? I know we have quite a bit of time to discuss, but is there something that you want to tell our listeners?
Well, you know, this week is the anniversary of the Iraq invasion, and I was fortunate to have a small piece appear on Truth Out as well, commemorating that because of the experiences that we had when my son was finally deployed there. As well. And here we are 15 years later, still in Iraq, still in Afghanistan, 17 years later in Afghanistan. And, you know, and these wars are very much still off the radar. And this is, you know, this is, if my book has any impact, I hope that that's at least some of it, you know, to kind of continue to bring attention. If there's time, Maria, I have a short passage.
Oh, please, please, yes.
We were, my wife Heather and I were, and she's been just an amazing partner in this journey. It's one that we would not have survived, I think, without each other. But she and I were up visiting Francis on Fort Drum, just a few days before the Iraq invasion. Now, he was supposed to go to Afghanistan, so we didn't know at that time that he would be heading to Iraq. Excuse me. But just a brief passage from after we got home a couple of days later was the invasion. When war came on March 19th, 2003, a few days after Heather and I got home, it felt, or the atmosphere that surrounded it felt, like the climax of a play in which we were now, in some bizarre Pirandello-like way, both spectators and actors. There had been all the basic elements of the drama: exposition, WMD reports and troop movements, foreshadowing, the first sign of a smoking gun, maybe a mushroom cloud, conflict, no explanation needed, intrigue, yellow cake, 9/11 attackers allegedly collude with Iraqi agents in Germany, never happened, rinse and repeat. Then came the spectacle, shock and awe. Aristotle regarded spectacle as the lowest element of drama, though it now became the most captivating for Americans. High-definition fireworks narrated by grim-faced anchors on millions of HDTVs for millions of spectators as thousands of Iraqi civilians were buried under Baghdad's smoking and crumbling buildings. America would be avenged for 9/11, Saddam taken down, Iraq conquered, oil revenue would pay it for it all, and soldiers would, to a person in uniform, become heroes. As embedded reporters wearing clunky Kevlar vests and helmets that resembled Calphalon spaghetti pots told us from noisy and crowded trucks on the road to Baghdad, their role in the drama to shore up the administration's stewy message of patriotism, heroism, resolve, victory, freedom, Rambo on the move, John Wayne, who never served in the military in real life, taking that hill or desert, Surgical strikes, targets of opportunity to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger. Language itself warped to the purpose. Francis called that evening from Fort Drum to see if we were all right.
I tell you, it's a beautifully written book, Bob. So,
well, thank you.
You know, and our condolences to you and your wife for the loss of Francis. And he survived through your words, and so thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Yes, he was one of the invisible walking wounded. He was not, you know, visibly injured, and yet he had so much, both physically and morally, that he carried with him.
Well, we look forward to seeing you on Sunday at Prospero's at 3 p.m. And francisfund.org is the website, and the blog, Bob Summers' blog, Uncommon Hours. And thank you so much for coming on the
program. Thank you for having me, Maria. I appreciate it.
You bet. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. This is ArtSpeak Radio. Hey, hello. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd. And up next, we have the very talented Charlene Pryor. She's an artist, author, illustrator. She has a studio at the Livestock Exchange Building, Pony Art Studio. And Charlene's going to discuss her books, Truman, The Cool Red Mule. So welcome, my friend Charlene.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, you are so talented. I met you few years back and your studio at the Livestock Exchange Building. You had these really wonderful horse paintings and so much going on, and we had a really wonderful conversation, and then you told me about Truman, the Cool Red Mule. What makes him so cool?
I don't know.
And red.
And he's red. Well, he's very self-assured, and I wanted a painting of a mule, whimsical mule, and I paint horses and other livestock, which is perfect to be in the Livestock Exchange Building to paint livestock. So anyway, I painted this funny-looking red mule, and he started talking to me. And he said, "Hi, my name's Truman. It's so cool. You have to tell people about me." So I thought about it, and I wrote a little kid's book, Truman the Cool Red Mule. I put audio, I put sounds with it. Little noises. It talks about how Truman, his daddy was a donkey, his mommy was a horse, and he's a mule, of course. Mm-hmm. And he's got his daddy's big tall ears, his mama's mane and tail.
Hey, that's my life story.
But it doesn't matter that he's different, he says. Yeah. He thinks it's pretty cool because life's what you make with what you got, what you learn in school. So I did that. And it was just kind of cute. And then he said, "Well, you know, I could teach kids the alphabet as well."
That's so fun. Well, you know, you have three of these books, Truman the Cool Red Mule, and A to Z with Truman, and then The Counting with Truman. So that, you know, it's so much fun to read and, you know, kind of follow along where his adventures take you.
Yes. The counting book has more, or the counting book has the most audio on it, audio interaction. The parents can read the story to their kids, and then the kid pushes the button, and, oh, look, there's a noise. And lots of livestock noises, of course.
Well, now you've brought your Kindle with you.
Yes.
So do you want to read from that?
Sure. I'll start the A to Z one, and then I might read one from the numbers. It's A is an apple, shiny and red. And then you hear Truman eating. B is for the bridle I wear on my head. C and D are the notes in a chickadee's song. So now when kids hear a chickadee, they'll know, you know. And then on the counting book... Oh, my.
Well, these are, let's see, while you're looking for that, okay. TrumanTheCoolRedMule.com is the website.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's one red mule named Truman. With two tall ears. And he has three feathered friends. Let's see. And a robin.
So how can are, well, let me just say this. You have the book in print, but you also have Kindle.
No, it's not. Well, I didn't. It's not in print because I couldn't. I'm self-published on Amazon for Android devices and also iBook for Macs. And I couldn't figure out how to self-publish a book with sounds on it. Yeah, so yeah. I just published them online. I would love to find a way to publish them, you know, in book form. But I haven't figured that out yet. It's hard without... without a publisher.
Well, but we love Truman the Cool Red Mule, and, you know, we are really, they're just so much fun to look at and listen to. And
here's, we've got five fussy hens here.
I like that.
It's just, I think with more children being on electronic devices younger ages, I just think these would be fun. And my grandkids absolutely love them.
And that makes sense, you know, because I go out and I see a lot of kids with their iPads or their, you know, a parent's phone and that sort of thing. So, you know, you are reaching them that way. Yeah. You know, I want to talk to you about your work aside from the books. You're an accomplished painter and artist yourself. So I just want to shift and ask you, do you have any upcoming events, exhibitions that you want to share with us?
And if people want to see the old Livestock Exchange building, it's restored to its original form, which is where my studio is. And we're having an open studio event on April 13th and 14th, Friday from 5 to 9 and Saturday from 11 to 3. And there are about 30 artists in the building, and over half of those people will be participating. And you can go to each artist's studio and look at their work, and it's all media, all media.
So. Well, off and on through the years, I've had studios there and on pretty much on the same floor, but it is filled with artists, Nina Irwin and, the photographer, I can't think of her name, but Vanessa Lacey has a gallery there.
She does, and Kiosk Gallery is moving into the Livestock Exchange building from Columbus Park, and also in April... the Golden Ox will be reopening, the Golden Ox restaurant, which is a Kansas City icon.
I love that.
And they're using a lot of the old decor in the restaurant.
Yeah, it was pretty Western-y. I remember like the brands on the...
still very Western-y. In fact, when they were discarding some of the ruined carpet from the restaurant, I grabbed a piece for my studio.
Yeah, you did, you brat. I am talking to Charlene Pryor, who is an artist, author, illustrator. Pony Art Studio at the Livestock Exchange building is where she... creates her work. We're talking about Truman the Cool Red Mule as one of her books that she's written and illustrated. Should I say book?
Oh, well, they're e-books, guess. Or there's three. And
they're very interactive, and they've got the animal sounds with them. And, you know, they're a lot of fun.
And mules are very interesting as well. They're smarter than horses.
Well, and I love the fact that he came to you.
He did.
Just kind of like, what?
I know. And there have been people that wanted to buy the painting I did of him. And I said, no, that painting talks to me. So I did make prints of all of his painting, his portrait. And one guy even has it as his screen on his iPhone.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. So, you know, the Missouri Mules.
And so the website is TrumanTheCoolRedMule.com. Any other sort of social media that...
Truman has a Facebook page.
Of course.
And
of
then course. I have a website, CharlenePryor.com, where you can see my artwork and learn a little bit more about me. I retired from television news in 2013, and... now I'm having a blast.
Yeah, that was local here, right?
It was Channel 5 News. I worked there for 39 years.
Wow.
During the silver age of journalism.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
When we didn't have all the fake news.
Exactly.
That's so wrong.
What is that?
You know, Charlene, were you around at the Stockyard Exchange Livestock Exchange building when they had the horses and they had the stables out back.
Yes.
And the tack store.
Yes. Yeah. I love that.
I know.
I love that.
And I thought perhaps Truman came out of that experience.
Well, I remember that. And even before then, with all the cattle back there.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the cattle when I'd go down to the American Royal Horse Show, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And, of course, Channel 5 used to do the parade, the American Royal Parade every year.
Yeah. So. You know, I had a studio during that time, and I had one favorite horse. You know, he just was a little bit smaller than the others, so he was less frightening. But I nicknamed him Soupy.
Soupy.
And I really wanted to take Soupy home and just kind of put him in my garage, but that never happened.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll have to write a book about Soupy.
That's right. That would be good.
Soupy and Truman.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. You're such a joy.
Oh, thank you so much.
Anything else that we left off?
Can't think of. It's just I hope people like Truman, and I hope their kids. I have to warn you on the counting book. Truman eats too many red apples, gets a tummy ache, and then he toots. And
that
all
happens.
The animals run away. So.
That happens.
Yes.
Hey, say hello to your lovely husband for me, will you?
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. And you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. Hello. Happy Wednesday, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, or listening to us online at kkfi.org. Yay. So, who's up next, Maria? That would be Stephen Johnson, and he's going to talk about the three-panel mosaic. Well, let me just backtrack. There's a three-panel mosaic by Lawrence Artis and Caldecott Award-winning children's book author Stephen T. Johnson, and it will become part of the new Johnson County Library Lenexa branch. And he's here to talk all about that because it's really quite a project, isn't it, Stephen?
Oh, yes, and I'm delighted to be working on it. And it'll be three glass mosaic panels created in Germany and by a wonderful company called Franz Mayer of Munich that was created in the complicated times of King Ludwig I in Bavaria in the mid-1800s. And the building still stands, and when you go over there to work with the artisans, it's like going back in time.
It's
a magical place.
Well, I want to backtrack and just say a little bit about the Johnson County Commission had approved for you to complete a 3 5.5 by 24 foot panels as a celebration of language and letters, right?
Right.
And the pieces will be embedded in concrete and installed in a public commons area of the library. And once up, they will be visible through large glass windows from the outside of the building as well as inside.
Inside and the balcony, yeah.
So you're going to be working with handmade glass, right?
Right. And so I propose this design, which is based on the alphabet, and that's sort of my thing, like your previous guest. And I have three alphabet books out. One's called Alphabet City, the other one's An Abstract Alphabet, and the other one's Alphabet School. So intermixed in all three are some of my imagery that you'll recognize, and they'll have the books in the collection. But more to the point, so there'll be uppercase and lowercase letters in each panel. From the first one, if you can imagine, will be A through I, and then so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And for your listeners who can't really see any visuals, it's all very based on abstract collage and graffiti and all kinds of things that you'd find on a city street. So inside the murals are contrasts of typography that you may find in the books, and throughout the decade, styles change, interesting use of uppercase and lowercase fonts, and it'll be sort of a find the letters as you, and so every time you go to view the imagery, hopefully you'll see something new.
And I'm a sucker for typography because it's just, I love it as a design tool, you know. And so the piece is going to be very colorful.
Very colorful, yeah.
And you're working with a company in Germany.
Right.
And how does that partnership work if they're in Germany? Do you go there and work with them?
A little bit of back and forth. We've done three projects together. I have large murals in Los Angeles and in Brooklyn, New York, and then some work in the Dallas airport, in Love Field Airport in Dallas. And so they do some samples of, right now we're in the sample phases of trying different little areas and exploring different techniques, but they kind of have my sensibility of design, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. I'll go over there and oversee a little bit, but they're so talented that I trust them with the design.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then they package everything up in, oh, let's say about 3 to 4 foot square boxes, and it's like a big puzzle piece.
Wow.
And they're these abstract shapes of mosaics that are solid on a temporary grout support, and each one is numbered, and then they're shipped over here, and then they bring in two artisans to install them. So it goes up little piece by piece, and at the end it's grouted, so you'll never know that they've been separated.
So these are 3 5.5 by 24 panels, very very colorful. So I know you mentioned the topography, but is there an inspiration behind this design?
Yes. Well, they were the commissioners and all that I proposed the work for were very enthusiastic about my work and allowed me the freedom to really push what I could do as an artist, a visual creator of mm-hmm. space. I love public space because mm-hmm. we deal with every single age group and cultures and all that, and it's just a place for people to gather and have conversations and meet as well. So using language and typography is and three is such an important kind of numerical aspect in the world. You know, the haiku is in three, or a part of a classical overtures broken down into three parts, movements, and that kind of thing.
And I want to mention that the money comes from the 1% for public art that was set aside for the capital improvement projects. Now, I understand the library is expected to be completed and open in the fall of 2019. Has that changed?
Let's see. I don't have a firm date. I think it was in the spring of 2019. But, well, there's everything needs to be sort of figured out as they build it and all that. But But it'll go up. The mural itself will be installed in about 2 to 3 week time period.
Beautiful. And Stephen, if you could share with our listeners your website or any other sort of media outlets that they can find an update on your work or this particular project.
Well, I don't think there's a whole lot out. Something came out in the press right after it was awarded, but everybody is welcome to view my website, which would have it in the public art section, which is Stephen with a PhD Johnson.com. And then you're welcome to peruse my other work, from abstract paintings to figurative to
really
children's books.
Beautiful work.
Thank you.
Yeah. And speaking of that, although you have this project that's taking priority right now, do you have some upcoming events that you want to share with us, or group shows or anything that's
Well, I just got back from Warrensburg, Missouri, where there was the 50th anniversary of a children's book festival, and that was just a delight to workshops with young people from the 6th grade to 10th grade years, and then meet my colleagues from around the country who are amazing authors and illustrators, like Jack Gantos and Brad Sneed, a local illustrator here. And I'm currently working on a children's book called Music Is, which deals with different genres of music, and it's stylistically, it's gone into sort of a retro mode. Like, you know the old jazz and classical album covers
cocktail.
With the 50s and 60s, Saul Bass designers. That kind of thing. Retro cocktail hour.
I love it.
Yeah. And your theme, I think, is the song.
Yeah, it's very tipsy.
Yeah. Well, we're sort of the noon hour, aren't we?
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, and so it's not easy, to be honest with you, to sum up every single musical genre in a few words.
Yeah.
But it's taught me a lot to do so. So very singular words. And there may be a component of an accordion book, which I'm really working on, where children have an interactive moment to be able to create a sound.
That sounds great, too.
Yeah.
So, again, your website, well, they'll be able to find all this information at your website, social media.
Yeah, on Instagram, they're on there as well. But that's, I think, what you got to do these days.
Yeah.
But
So share your website with us again?
It's StephenTJohnson.com, T like Theodore.
You know, and I would invite you back anytime to give us an update of progress on this work. And, of course, you know, anything else that, that you've got as a painter and author.
So. Well, I really appreciate it. I love being on your program. And it's nice to talk to you off air about your work. So.
Well, we love having you here. Yeah. You know, this is a treat for us and the listeners. So,
well, yeah. Thank you so much, Maria.
You bet. Well, we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. How'd you like that Chicano Batman? That's a lot of fun, yeah. So welcome back to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Up next, we have Wick Thomas, and we also have the lovely Katie Gilchrist here in the studio, and they're going to talk about this really wonderful thing that's happening, Drag Queen Story Time. Welcome, my friends.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yay, yay. So, this is a lot of fun. Drag queens perform and read stories to kids in a theatrical setting every Sunday, and it began back in February. So tell us about it, Wick.
Yeah, it's been really great. You know, it was Annie Cherry and Katie Gilchrist came to me with this idea, and it was amazing. It's something I'd wanted to do working at the Kansas City Public Library forever. It's just been amazing. The children have been so in love with the drag queens.
But was it a hard sell? It's like,
No.
I've been aware of other communities having this series of stories with children and drag queens, and I thought, knowing a lot of the beautiful queens in our community, I thought it would be something that we could do. And we've had really, really great turnouts. In fact, both events have been sold out when we've done them. We're almost sold out for Easter. We have interest in May already. It's been really beautiful.
I think March was almost sold out by the end of our February show. So
I think it actually was. Yeah.
Well, and I love this, that it says, broaden your kids' horizons in your own by bringing them to an event in which they can get to know people who they defy, who defy rigid gender restrictions with glamour, humor, and confidence. And this series is really recommended for the whole family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What's on tap for April? And that's going to be Easter Sunday, right?
It will be Easter Sunday.
Also April Fool's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Appropriately, we have Daisy Bouquet.
We do.
We love our Daisy.
Who's going to be releasing an album soon, too, so that's, you know, fortunate timing. And we're going to have the Easter Bunny there.
We will have the Easter Bunny. We'll have a little bit of a Easter egg hunt and lemonade and tea and stuff, like, for the kids. And yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be great. So it's kind of a special one, I think.
I love it. Well, your intention, I'm reading, is to capture the imagination and play of the gender fluidity of childhood and to give children positive and unabashedly queer role models while encouraging literacy and exploration of theatrical arts. It sounds magical.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful.
It's been really, really inspiring. We knew that this was going to be a really fun event. We just didn't know how much we would be personally, emotionally impacted by it. I think I've cried probably every time we've
Katie's always in the background crying, and it's pretty beautiful. It's like she starts crying, the kids are, you know, everyone's screaming happy, and then Katie's crying.
I'm just in the corner, like openly weeping because it's so beautiful.
A lot of feelings.
Oh, that's terrific. You know, and I want to mention to folks that it's at the Pearl, which is at 1715 Wyandotte in Kansas City, Missouri. And again, April 1st, Easter Sunday, tickets are on sale now.
Mm-hmm.
Sold out, or do you kind of know where you're at?
Not quite.
Not yet. We have a few left for April, and our May event will be going live right before we do the April event.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had Boris to death?
We've talked about it, We have not
he
yet.
He is on the list.
Yeah.
I have to say, he is one of my favorites. I fell in love the first time I met him.
Yeah, no, I have a feeling he'll make an appearance in the near future.
That would be great.
Sure.
Very much hope so.
Because, you know, I think it brings to mind that it's not just, you know, men as drag queens. There's women mm-hmm. as drag kings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, definitely. And I think that we want to, I mean, that's a big part of it. You know, one of the focus events we have for the kids is that they have to shake off all the silly things they've been taught about, you know, what they can wear, who they can be. And so I think that's a big focus of this, too, is like, it's just that, you know, you don't have to be a certain thing. You can be whatever you want to be.
I love it. So you encourage folks to dress up in your most fantastic princess, prince, animal, or other costume that makes you feel fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, definitely. Right along with us.
Yeah, it's true. In February at our first event, there was a young boy who was in his very fabulous velvet gown with stockings and patent leather velvet and velvet shoes and a fascinator. Mm-hmm. And he was so, so happy because we're creating and facilitating a culture of acceptance and happiness every time we do this event, I feel like.
I think it's amazing. Little Henry, I think.
Yeah, it was Henry.
Yeah, he was adorable.
So can you take it outside of the theater, and can you take it outside of the Pearl and maybe into elementary schools, or do you think that the timing has to be right for that?
I think
telling stories about loving yourself and being who you are timeless.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It would be my hope that any school would be willing to spread that word into the young minds that are trying to grow and learn and pick up new information.
Yeah.
And the package in which that message is delivered shouldn't matter. I don't think.
Yeah.
And we're already getting inquiries from the library, from some other institutions in town to bring it on the road to them.
Oh, great.
So I think that you'll probably see us outside of the Pearl as well in the near future.
So much fun. So we're talking about Drag Queen Storytime with Wick Thomas and Katie Gilchrist. And we're just going to shift gears for a little bit because I want to ask, well, Wick and the Trix, your group.
That's the thing.
I want to mention that you have an upcoming gig.
We do, actually. We have a show on Monday, in fact, at Davies Uptown. It's going to be really good. Hipshot Killer, Wolves and Wolves and Wolves and Wolves, which is one of my favorite band names I've ever heard. But yeah, that's our first, actually, we haven't been playing for 3 months, so that's our first show back in Kansas City in a minute.
That'd be fun. And the website for Wick.
Oh, yeah, we're on all the things. WickandTheTrix.com or literally anywhere else on the
Facebook,
internet. We are there.
All of that.
Yeah. Wick and the Trix.
And Katie?
I am currently directing a musical called Passing Strange for the Black Repertory Theater of Kansas City. And Bohemian Cult Revival, a company I co-produce and co-own, has a tribute to Janis Joplin and Stevie Nicks on Saturday night.
Beautiful. And for more information about that?
You can go to www.brtkc.com for Black Rep and www.bcr.rocks for Bohemian Cult Revival, but both have internet presence on Facebook as well.
And I think it's really important to not only talk about the drag queen story time that you're both involved with, but also aside from that, you have other gigs as performers, musicians, directors, and that sort of thing. So it only makes sense to share that information with our listeners.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've got actually Annie Cherry, the other co-creator, and I have
Annie
a show
Cherry.
Tomorrow night. We're guest starring in The Craft for Late Night Theater at Missy
V's. Oh my gosh!
8 p.m.
How long is that going to run?
I think they're April 18th. I want to say something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure off the top of my head, but Late Night Theater, The Craft, it's going to be amazing. But go tomorrow because that's when Annie and I are guests.
Yeah, go see Annie. Annie's also in a Bohemian Cult Revival.
We love her. Oh my gosh, yeah, we love her. If you just tune in, I'm talking to Wick Thomas and Katie Gilchrist. They're talking about the Drag Queen Storytime, which is an event designed to encourage early literacy and challenge gender stereotypes. What are some of the stories you read or you share in performance?
Oh yeah, so we've got different stories. A lot of them have focused on just acceptance. We've got there are so many stories coming out right now, children's books especially, about LGBT children and that experience and what that's like with people coming out younger and younger. And so we've done we've done 10,000 Dresses, we've done I Like Myself, we do two books every month. And we're going to keep that theme of, just not necessarily all LGBT books, but books that are about, loving yourself and just, and being who you want to be in the world.
That's wonderful. The Pearl here in Kansas City, Missouri at 1715 Wyandotte. And where would folks find out more information, like tickets and all of that?
You can contact Annie and I at The Pearl on Facebook, The Pearl KC. You can email us at you can email us at just thepearlkc@gmail.com. You can email us. Our website's under construction, and that should be up and running very, very soon. But if you Google The Pearl KC, you'll come to either Annie or myself.
So now, is your calendar full of the stories for the upcoming events? But can you share with
us? It's a good question.
Plotted through June.
Yeah.
So. Wow.
Yeah, and we have the Queens booked for the next 2 months. We've got I have a lot of former colleagues at the Kansas City Public Library who are really helping us curate like which books to use, which is really useful to have those libraries.
And we've been those resources are invaluable, and we've been so lucky with the Queens who have taken this leap with us. I mean, we had Sister Glamorama Ding Dong from the City of Fountain Sisters, who is Andy Chambers' alter ego. We've had Luna Flair. We have Daisy coming up in April. We have Molten Decadence in May.
Hey, that's the first time we've announced it.
I just said it. Whoops.
Yeah, no, it's good.
How fun.
It's good.
And then
we
have Ron McGee in June.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there anything that that you want to mention to our listeners that we haven't discussed?
You know, I love for anyone to come check it out. Like, it really is a fun experience for, I think, the children. You know, I think the drag queens have done a really good job of it being, you know, the story time being for the children, but also being for the adults, too.
Yeah, I think that's important, that it's not just for children. I mean, it's just for everybody, really.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Now, what time do the performances begin? Because I don't think I have that on my...
Oh, the doors will go at 3 o'clock. Typically, the read starts around, like, 3:30, 3:40.
Mm-hmm.
We've had books that were donated to us so kids can actually read and be in the room with their families. And then the queen will read, and then we do, WIC facilitates different crafts and activities. Then we take a short break, and the queen comes back and performs. And so it's been really interactive for all of the of the ages that have joined us so far.
And we end it with a little dance party for the kids every time, too.
Yes, we do.
I love that. I will be there. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. And please come back. You know, this is such a fun thing to do in the city. So thank you for bringing it to the community.
So
thanks for having us.
You bet. And I also want to say thanks to Bob Summer, Stephen Johnson, Charlene Pryor, of course, Wick Thomas and Katie Gilchrist. Next week, March 28th, we have M.G. Salazar, Michelle T. Johnson, Ryan Wilkes, and Rodolfo Moran III. They're all going to be in. It's an hour-long discussion of these writers and poets and artists and all. So please come back for that. Stay tuned next for Jazz in the Afternoon with Jeff Harshbarger. I think he's here. I'm not sure. I haven't seen him. But anyway, at any rate, stay tuned with for that. And I want to say thank you all so much for tuning in, for listening today and every day. And so say it with me, honey. I'm coming home.